Alt Down Under. Turn this banger up. Not a pom, judging Aussie tunes. Aussie music, mate. Alternative Down Under. Alternative Down Under.
I'm proud of the way we put on a show now, and so I'm looking forward to these two hometown shows that are coming up. Daft Punk was kind of a band that everyone was sort of psyched on around then. There was new rock, and then there was like a lot of dance music coming at the same time, and that was all kind of rubbing together. I think Dan created a lot of it out of his own imagination, and he was a graphic designer, so he was kind of building worlds in his mind, and I think the music was an extension of his visual artistry. You mentioned the Strokes, they became, you know, like fashion icons and like attitude icons. The name Indie Sleaze, no, I mean, I think it's a British term, but it's traveled. It's sort of, yeah, it's like it's become the name of the genre. It's a bit like yacht rock or something.
Hello, it's another episode of Alt Down Under. Welcome along. My name is Luke Scanlon. I am your host yet again. This is episode 33. That there at the top of the show was a snippet of my conversation in this episode. Our featured artist is Cut Copy, and I'll be speaking to the band's bassist, Mr. Ben Browning, ahead of the band's Australian dates. And they're also playing at Golden Plains, which I will be heading to. We get into a chat about that. Ben gives his tips for survival across the weekend, how to handle a festival, how to handle those late sets, and what a lineup it is at Golden Plains this year. I am so excited to get back down to the soup after being at Meredith just before Christmas. Basement Jacks are headlining, then one of my faves, Jayla Ngonda, who our last interview Wilson mentioned, she's supporting him on his Australian tour dates as well. Also, Melbourne Punk Rockers. Public figures are playing. The brilliant DJ Francois K, plus Water From Your Eyes, Ty Segal, Obongjaya. All of these amazing artists are making their way down to Golden Plains, playing at the Supernatural Amphitheatre. It's going to be brilliant. I can't wait. My bus is booked. My mates are purchasing gazebos. We are ready to roll. Bring it on.
Alternative Down Under.
So yeah, in the chat with Ben, we'll be getting into all things early days of Cut Copy. The band actually started way back when, in 2001. We'll be talking about that. Ben was kicking around the Melbourne music scene himself, hadn't quite joined the band at that point. He actually joined the band around 2007, 2008 time, when the band released what is considered their breakout album, In Ghost Colours. We'll be getting into that. The scene at the time when he came through and the rest of the band was starting to make waves in the indie scene. The influences of dance acts such as Daft Punk. Then, of course, garage punk was such a big thing at the time. The Strokes, the Libertines, my favourite. All of these influences were going on at the time. And Ben basically thinks that amalgamation of those sounds is where Cut Copy found their home. I'll ask him about Indie Sleaze. Where the fuck did that phrase come from? And why does he not like it? Also, I'll be asking him about last year's brilliant album, the band's seventh studio album, Moments. Did really, really well. Great track on there with Kate Bollinger as well. Really big fan of that tune. And why are the Simpsons responsible for the basis of Ben's worldviews? All of that, plus his dream gig venue, coming up here on episode 33 of Alt Down Under.
Alternative Down Under.
So how are we doing, guys? I hope it's been a good couple of weeks since our last episode. That chat with Wilson, she's just announced some dates playing in Australia, playing 5 dates in total. She put up a really nice little post on Instagram the other day as well. She's playing Sydney, Brisbane, Adelaide, Gold Coast, and here in Melbourne. And she said simply, "These songs were never meant to live only in your headphones. They were written to be sung in a room full of people who are feeling them too." So yes, get on board, get over to Wilson's Instagram, her TikTok, wherever you follow her, and search those tickets as well. Get involved, because live, I can only imagine how well her tracks translate, particularly off of her latest album, Bloom, that came out last year. So that is the Bloom tour for Wilson. Another cool local thing that I've been going to this week, Drive Live. 9th, PBS, down at Collingwood Yards. Very, very cool little series of gigs that they've been putting on at PBS. Community radio, so important, and very much alive and well here in Melbourne. And it's been amazing. The little space there, the CY space down at Collingwood Yards. The other night I saw Brown Spirits and Bumpy, of course, her album from last year, Kanana. Unbelievable album, so, so special. And today, the day this episode comes out, I'll be watching Gut Health, one of my all-time faves on the Melbourne live scene. And the beautiful, the wonderfully talented Awelu Dreamhouse, who've just recently dropped their own eponymous debut album via Hope Street Recordings. Another band I'll be hoping to get on the show very, very soon. Yeah, do make sure you check out any local events that your local radio stations, your community stations are putting on, because any chance to get behind them, even if they are free events, just that word of mouth, promotion of these events, promotion of the services and the community that these stations provide is so important. So do get on board. Okay, I'm going to keep the intro pretty tight and tidy today, and we're going to get straight into the interview with Ben Browning, bassist for Cut Copy. As I mentioned at the top of the show, 7 albums deep now, the band that formed and first started releasing in 2001. They are absolute indie gods of the indie Melbourne, the indie Australia scene, and they are currently, and they will be, heading on tour in Australia. Those dates for you: 5th of March, Enmore Theatre in Sydney. Friday the 6th, they're playing at the Beach Hotel in Byron Bay. 7th, Golden Plains. Lock yourself in. I'll be down there at the Meredith Supernatural Amphitheatre. And Friday 13th of March, they wrap things up with a nice big fat homecoming show here in Melbourne, their native Melbourne, live at the Gardens, part of that series down at the Royal Botanic Gardens, aka The Tan. Okay, let's get into it then. My chat with Ben Browning, bassist for the wonderful and constantly evolving Cut Copy. Ben from Cut Copy, welcome to Alt Down Under. How are you, mate?
Doing good, mate. Yeah, good to be here.
Lovely to have you on board. We're just having a little chat there. You were chatting to us live from San Francisco. How has your day been, mate? I went to trivia last night. I came third. I was pretty happy with that. Have you achieved as much as I have?
No, that sounds like, yeah, that sounds a little outside my comfort zone. I've had a pretty chill day. I got to catch up with a mate, take a hike, and buy him lunch because it was his birthday a couple of days ago. And I was just letting my kid ride his bike outside, and he's just successfully sort of learned how to ride a two-wheeler. So I'm learning to let go.
That's a big step, man. Big step. Do you remember how you went learning how to ride a bike? Because I like fully stacked it when I was quite young. I went over the handlebars and then didn't revisit for a good like 2-3 years. And then it was actually my best friend at primary school that ended up teaching me how to ride my bike.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, I don't really remember. I remember, yeah, getting a handle on it pretty okay. But I was, yeah. I stacked pretty bad in my 20s and didn't ride for a long time after that, actually. Yeah,
nice, mate. I had a bad concussion 6 months ago, and it did take me a while to like recalibrate with getting on two wheels again. It does take a bit of time for sure, yeah. Man. Absolutely. Bizarre little segue there. It was probably around not long before you guys started out as a band that I did learn to ride my bike. And I actually wanted to chat to you about that period, because like, obviously great that you guys formed around then, but in the wider music sphere, there was so much great music coming out around that period. Like in the States, you had the White Stripes, the Strokes, even bands like Queens of the Stone Age. The Black Keys have released a couple of albums by that point. The Libertines in the UK, my favorite band, they're literally up on my wall behind me. What was that time like for you guys? And because I presume you were kind of just music fans that came together and you were feeding off what was being released at that point.
Yeah, I mean, the band evolved in a slightly odd way in terms of how Cut Copy formed, but I joined like around 2007-8, I think it was. I was kind of in the same scene in Melbourne, and yeah, I mean, you saying that you were learning to, you know, ride a bike around 2001 makes me feel pretty old, but but it was a cool time. I mean, I just finished high school. You mentioned the Strokes. They just sort of, they became, you know, like fashion icons and like attitude icons, and they kind of reminded people of the 80s a little bit, and that became kind of like, that was the music of our childhood, so that became relevant again. Daft Punk was kind of a band that everyone was sort of psyched on around then. There was a lot of, there was new rock, and then there was like a lot of dance music coming at the same time, and that was all kind of rubbing together. So I guess Cut Copy was like a period where people that were into dance music started picking up guitars, and people that played music with guitars started like picking up synthesizers, and it all kind of started mashing together.
Yeah, definitely, man. Because in around the time, like I'd say, In Ghost Colors 2008 came out, around the time you joined the band, I, like as well at home in the UK, but I think just around the kind of indie sphere around the world, bands like MGMT, Foals, all those sorts of bands. A band that I love at home were Friendly Fires. I don't know if you ever came across them at all, but yeah. I loved them back in the day. They were class. And it's so true. It is definitely indie meets that dance element. And I don't know why that happened at that time. It just, there seemed to be loads of bands doing that thing at that one point.
I think even like the Strokes had kind of a, almost like pro, like their music was almost like craft work in a way. Like it was fairly really efficient, and like there was it was kind of, it had like a Rangers kind of attitude towards the production and stuff, but I think maybe that it was just in the air, it just was it was the zeitgeist, I guess, but it was interesting for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It just felt like a really fun time for music. And I think that sound in particular, like you said, it kind of lends itself a bit to the 80s with the synth stuff as well. Like bands like Human League, for instance, I hear a lot of that in those sorts of bands. Just listening back to you guys, the breadth of work that you guys have put out over that time is amazing. Now done 7 studio albums. How does it feel now at this point in 2026, like looking back at that? That must be pretty cool to look at that canon of work, if you like, and it must be quite a proud thing for you guys in the band.
It is, and it's hard sometimes because you don't really want to do that instinctively. You kind of just always want to look forward and think, oh, the next thing that I do is going to be the best thing. But, you know, you kind of got to be realistic as well, and, like, you'll – whatever that time that you come up in and you, when you first make music and people discover you, I think that just means something to people. So it's hard to, you can't really escape that historical context. We were forced to revisit our old catalog because we put out like a box set a few years ago. I think it was sort of during the pandemic. And I was like putting together some video stuff based on old music videos. So I was listening through all of it. And yeah, I think it's really cool music. I mean, a lot of it was, like the first album, a lot of it was Dan. The very early stuff was just sort of Dan by himself, and then on the Bright Like Neon Love, Tim and Mitchell worked on that record. And so there's that kind of guitars meeting kind of electronic thing on that quite a bit. But yeah, I think Dan created a lot of it out of his own imagination, and he was a graphic designer, so he was kind of building worlds in his mind. And I think the music was an extension of his visual artistry. Like he did all the artwork. And so there was kind of this sort of weird French vision of the 80s mixed with sort of future dance mixed with nostalgia and a little melancholy. And I think it just was a really cool suit. But to your earlier point of just like looking back over it as a one big piece of work, yeah, it's odd. It's odd because I think the last 10 years have kind of flown by for us. So it goes from one point where you feel like you're in this thing and you're on this journey to like, oh, it's been like there, the journey's like partly behind us now. But yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It's a cool journey to be on. And it's interesting what you say about the visual aspect of the band. Cause I was going to ask you about that. Like a lot of your videos, a lot of the artwork has kind of got that. It does marry very well with the music, and it's very tangible. A lot of it, I think it really draws you in as a listener. I think that's such a unique thing for you guys in Cut Copy.
I think people call that like branding these days, but I think then it was just like just a natural thing, an exploration of design and music kind of going together. And yeah, I think the other thing that's interesting for me about Cut Copy, as a almost like an outsider, is that Dan was doing stuff where he was like pulling in a lot of different references and mashing them up, using collage to create visual stuff that I think now it just seems like part of the world that we're in. It just feels normal. But back then it was kind of a new, it was fairly fresh and fairly new. So I think that he was kind of on the crest of that wave there for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And it's definitely like not aged in any way, I don't think. On that point, I wanted to ask, because listening to the latest record, Moments, obviously it came out midway through 2025. I have to ask, has Dan got like a vocal version of Dorian Gray somewhere in an attic? Because his voice has just remained the same throughout the entirety of the band, which is really cool. Because a lot of the time, if you stick with a band for across like a couple of decades, the voice does tend to change a little bit, just naturally. But he's, I don't know how he's done this. He's nailed it, just staying the same the whole time.
I mean, I would think that if you asked him, he would say his voice has evolved a little bit. But yeah, he hasn't gone full, like, Joe Cocker or something. You know, our lifestyles changed probably 10 years ago. We started having kids and families and stuff, and we couldn't party like we used to, so... Maybe he's preserved it in that way. I know he's not a smoker, so that probably helps.
Yeah, exactly. Just an avid vapor.
Yes. Nailed.
I also wanted just quickly to revisit 2011, Zonoscope. That's probably like the album that I personally had the biggest connection with, probably just because of like you said, the timing of some albums for some people, that's their standout record. So that was when I was like 17, 18, I was at college, about to go to university. Like Take Me Over is just such a special track for me. I just love that song. And Pharaohs and Pyramids is just like such a belter of a track. Love that song. What was that period like for you around then? Because that was, yeah, I guess in terms of obviously you joined the band a little bit later, that was like 10 years into Cut Copy as a band. What was that little period like around there for you guys?
Well, yeah, that was super exciting for me because that was the first album that I worked on in the studio, even though, yeah, In Ghost Colors kind of came out as I was joining. So I toured that record, but I hadn't worked on in the studio. So Zonoscope was, yeah, that was cool. I mean, we got this warehouse in Heidelberg or something in Melbourne, and we thought we were going to make it ourselves. We spent a lot of time in there, but yeah, I remember being cold in that warehouse. I remember recording the bass to Take Me Over. I think it was the first bass line I'd ever done in the band or something. That was pretty fun. Yeah, it was a good time.
And
that album, obviously, that album was probably one of our most successful records that we released.
Yeah, also wanted to ask you about this like term that's kind of been coined within the last, I'd say, 5 years. I actually think it was during COVID it came out, this whole indie sleaze thing, because when I was going over your records for this interview, I was listening through, obviously, and then like it was popping up every now and then, like mid-noughties indie sleaze, late noughties indie sleaze, 2010s indie sleaze. And it's quite a funny thing that's come up. And I actually asked the Libertines about this like a few years ago, and they find it hilarious because they're just like, I don't even know where this term has come from. But you guys are part of that because you're part of that era. But I think, again, going back to those earlier bands, I think it's just a case of people wanting to pigeonhole stuff. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about that phrase.
The name Indie Sleaze. No, I mean, I think it's a British term, but it's traveled. It's sort of, yeah, it's like it's become the name of the genre. It's a bit like yacht rock or something. I think
so true.
I don't think I don't think that term ever got floated around at the time. Maybe it did. I feel like electro clash was the term that people used.
Yeah, okay.
At the time,
electro clash.
So the kind of indie synth thing. Electro clash. That's what I heard that more than anything else, and that wasn't a very cool word that anyone wanted to be associated with. I don't know, man. But I like the Vice parties and, you know, the pills and stuff. There was a lot of like munted people like making out. So, you know, it was pretty sleazy, I guess, in some ways. But but indie sleaze is a shit word for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, all right, we'll end it there. We'll cancel indie sleaze. We'll get it in the bin. All right, moving back to the current album, Moments. It did really well. Like, a lot of love from, like, Double J here in Australia. I love the album as well. How have you found it? I guess, what are we, like, 8 months down the track from when it was released. How have you found playing the record live? How have you found sitting with it as a new release?
It's been great. I mean, it's honestly, like, we're super proud of it. We really like worked pretty hard to like make sure it was, you know, the perfect album for us in a time when, you know, I guess making perfect albums is probably not the currency that people are really concerned about, but I think that's what we know how to do. And, you know, that's what I think a lot of our fans expect, is this like really layered and intricate and sort of detailed sort of compositions. So I guess it took a long time to come to see the light. And so even just achieving that itself is pretty nice. But then, yeah, I mean, playing it live in the States a few months back with the old songs, if they felt really like really naturally fit in with like our existing material, and like the, and fans seem to engage with it. So, I mean, you know, it's never going to be, I feel like you go and see bands sometimes and like, it's like new song, everyone's just waiting for an old song kind of vibe. Where I feel like our stuff, maybe people yep. are a little bit more like open to like hearing the new shit and just going with it.
The real litmus test, yeah. It's interesting you say that connection thing with the fans, because I was going to ask you about that, because being a band that has been around for a while, and you obviously have been a constant for in a lot of people's lives, how important is that connection for you guys as a band? And also, there's probably people that weren't even born when you first started out as a group that are now discovering Cut Copy. That must be like a pretty fulfilling thing for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, the longevity thing is probably something that we should be more proud of. We probably don't acknowledge it. But yeah, I think being able to cross different generations is pretty special. I have noticed some dads with their kids at gigs before, and I'm just like, okay, this is pretty cool. Maybe some mums too, I can't remember. But yeah, I definitely remember like one gig, like a dude had like who was like 10 or something in a Cut Copy shirt, and he was in a Cut Copy shirt. So yeah, I mean, yeah, that's super nice. Yeah, like the longer you do something like this, the more you actually appreciate it.
Yeah, so cool. Creating those like core memories within families is very cool as well. I think like that kid growing up is going to remember Cut Copy being his dad's favorite band. Like, I think that's like a very, very cool thing.
I'm always astounded that people are finding our music. I don't know how people discover bands these days. I don't really understand TikTok or whatever, but if we can somehow still be in reach people through the culture, I think that's really cool. And yeah, we know that our fans are definitely they're ride or die for sure.
On that as well, before we move on to your tour dates back in Australia, it's quite like a volatile time for a band to come through now, like in terms of the amount of stuff you've got to do online, just the amount of outward and outreach you've got to do as a band. Do you reckon you guys would have been able to operate in the way that you have done with, over so many years, had you come through now? Or is it just a case of right place, right time for you guys?
It was right place, right time for sure. But I mean, like, the internet was huge for us as well. Like, it was just a different version of it. It was much less demand. Like, it was much less about sort of everyday posting. But music got shared on MySpace and Facebook and things like that. And it was very democratic. It was before the algorithm had really evolved to what it is now. So we were able to sort of organically get a big get a fan base through the internet. So thankful for the internet. But yeah, sort of once the TikTok era came along, I think we were like, oh shit, we can't keep up with, you know, we can't post every day, and we're all living in different places. And I appreciate that. It's hard for bands to stand out, I guess, now. I mean, everyone has access to all this stuff. I don't know what kind of, if it's hard to sort of make an impact or not. But I appreciate the democracy of it all. Like, you know, you've got a laptop, you've got a music recording studio, you've got a camera in your phone, you know, everyone's got editing software now. It's like, I went to uni to get my hands on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah, true.
So it's so in some ways, I think being a band coming through now is probably cool, I guess, because you can make shit.
Yeah, it's a lot more readily available. Absolutely, man. Yeah, that's a good point, actually. On to your dates then in Australia, mate. Got 4 in total. Playing at the Enmore in Sydney on 5th of March. Then you're in Byron Bay on the 6th. Golden Plains and then 13th at the Tarn in Melbourne. Golden Plains, I'm going to. Before we start recording, I told you I'd just about recovered from Meredith. It's obviously at the same site. I'm very, very excited to see you guys live. I think you've got an 11:45 p.m. slot on the Saturday night, I believe it is. So how do you guys go playing that late? And also, if you're speaking to the fans, talking to fans that are munted, what is your words of advice for sticking it out and staying up, powering through and seeing Cut Copy?
I mean, if you're at Golden Plains, you can't escape us. Even if you need to go and sleep in your tent, you'll probably still hear our set. No, I think all the usual advice, stay hydrated, pace yourself, you know, wait for your drugs to kick in before you take another one. It will happen, you know, just probably be more sensible than I was 20 years ago. But no, we're super excited to play Golden Plains. It's a super special festival. And it's not far from where I grew up. I remember, like, my sister going there and seeing, like, punk bands and stuff. It's, like, something that we always feel honored to play. And, we can't wait for it. It's going to be special.
It's such a special festival. As I say, like, I went to the site for Meredith for the first time in November. And it's just, like, the soup, the natural amphitheater, the one stage, the sofas at the back. It's just, like, it's such a great setup. And I think there's a lot of love for that festival as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's good people. Yeah, it seems to be just like its own little community in a way. It reflects the sort of the strength of the Melbourne music scene, I guess, that's been there for a long time. You know, institutions like Triple R and, you know, all the venues in Melbourne and all the people that have kind of kept Melbourne a musical place. I think, you know, Meredith and Golden Plains are kind of a reflection of that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. That's so cool. And coming back to play Melbourne on the 13th of March as well at the Tarn. What are those homecoming shows like for you? Because you've said you've been over in the States for quite a while now. What's it like coming back and playing to a Melbourne crowd? That must be quite a special moment for you whenever that occurs.
It is. I mean, we played at the Forum, I think, in September. And it was our first show for a while. So, yeah, I mean, hometown shows used to be kind of nerve-wracking a little bit. There was a little bit of a sense of like, oh, you guys have done well overseas. Well, now you've really got to prove it, you know, that you have to put on an amazing yeah. show. So there was
extra pressure.
Extra pressure, a slight intimidation. And, you know, you look out and you see a friend. It's like you can play to like 20,000 randoms in Mexico City and then play to like 5 of your mates and all of a sudden you're shitting yourself. So seeing friends in the crowd, things like that. But honestly, I just love it now because, I don't know, not much left to prove. It's great to just be able to reconnect with people that I spent so much time with growing up. And I think I'm proud of the way we put on a show now. So I'm looking forward to these two hometown shows that are coming up a lot. Yeah,
absolutely pumped for you, man. It's what a great time. A full album cycle now. All these shows must be a lot of fun to be a part of, which is very cool. If you're ready, mate, we'll build your dream gig venue.
I'll have 2 pints, please. Fuck, I love this band. Get us a couple of frothies, mate. Yeah, boy. Yeah. Where are you going to have your dream gig, mate? The dream gig venue. Step this way.
Let's go and build your dream gig venue, Ben. First of all, can you please tell me the made-up name of your dream gig venue?
I was trying to think of this. I'd have to call it Kidinya Park. Maybe people know this, but it used to be the name of the football venue that was in Geelong where I grew up. So my grandfather was the curator at that ground. So I'm calling my venue Kidinya Park.
Love that. Are you a Cats fan then?
Yeah, I am. I am a Cats fan. Sorry to all the haters out there. Yeah.
Up next, who would you like as your support acts? Cut Copy, headlining the bill. Who are you having, dead or alive, at your dream gig venue?
I mean, it's a really, I mean, supporting us, you know, I'd have to think of someone that's like fits the bill. We had a dream support act for our show that's coming up in Sydney, which would have been the Midnight Juggernauts. They were a band, you know, in Melbourne when we were playing shows back in the late aughts, early 2010s. And yeah, just heroes of mine, friends of ours. Great band. I reckon they'd make a great opener.
Fuck yeah, love that. And your walkout song, if you're picking any track for you and the Cut Copy boys to walk out to, what are you having?
Why Can't We Be Friends by War. That would be my one. Yep.
Big tune.
Same as Homer Simpson when he walks out.
Yeah, nice man, absolutely. Do you still revisit The Simpsons, by the way? Because I did rewatch some like fairly recently, and I, as an adult, it's a completely different show.
I mean, only like the 90s era. I can't go past about the year 2000. So that was everything. All my views on the world were shaped by watching The Simpsons in the 90s, basically.
There you go. That's your headline from this interview. okay, the one dream bit of merch that you'd like to sell. Anything in the world that you would like to ship with Cut Copy logo on?
We have these kinds of questions in meetings with our managers and no one can think of anything. So you're really putting me on the spot. I mean, it's a cliche, but probably like, if we had our own like coffee beans or something, like that'd actually be cool.
That'd be great. Would they have Cut Copy inscribed on each singular bean?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. really good use of someone's time. Yeah.
$250 a bag.
Yes.
Cool. And finally, what is the one rule you would like to impose upon the crowd that they have to abide by?
Yeah, that's another one that I'm not sure. It's tricky. I mean, I know I've been to one show where I had to lock up my phone. It felt weird, but I kind of liked it. We don't do it.
Yeah, I've read that.
We don't do it at our shows. I would almost say, yeah, at least turn your phone off. I feel like if you can find an hour of your life or 90 minutes of your life where you're not looking at your screen, that's probably a good option.
Absolutely, man. Love that. Well, there you go. That is the dream gig venue. Perfect. I'd go there 100%.
I don't know. Yeah. Yes, I'd go to that. Yeah.
I'm pumped to see you guys at Golden Plains, and hopefully I'll catch your show at the Town as well on the 13th of March.
Awesome, man. Thanks for having me along. Appreciate it.
Alternative Down Under.
There you have it. The Simpsons, the basis to any worldview, in particular in the world of Ben Browning, bassist of Cut Copy. My thanks to Ben for dropping by for a chat, and just so excited for the band. I can still feel the love that they have for their craft, putting these songs together, playing live in particular. As he said there, the real litmus test for these new songs is getting out, connecting with fans that have been with them from the start, or fans that have been with them for 10 years. When you are a band that's been across a few different decades, you are drawing in fans from different generations, different areas, and people that would have heard you in different stages of their lives as well. So very, very cool. And actually got goosebumps thinking about how special that 11:45 PM slot at Golden Plains will be when I go and see the boys. So yeah, I think I'll be having one hell of a boogie to those guys. One hell of a boogie down at the amphitheatre that night at Golden Plains. Do be sure to check out their latest album, Moments, that drops midway through 2025. Very, very special record indeed. And yeah, do check out tickets to go and see Cut Copy playing on that March tour that they're doing. All right, that is it for another episode of Old Down Under. Thanks ever so much, guys. I'll be back with you very, very shortly with a fresh episode. Try and get one in just before I go to Golden Plains. If not, I'll see you on the flip side when I've maybe recovered and feel in a much fitter state to actually sit in front of a microphone. We'll see how we go. In the meantime, take care and see you very, very soon.